Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are at our new time, Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock. Welcome to On the Line. We have our same panel from last week, actually. Really excited about this. Joining us once again is Bradley Devlin. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on.
And as always, my partner in crime, Rob Sasso.
Hey, Alec. Great to be back. And Bradley, we weren't sick of you, so we re-invited you, but hold your horses. This might be the last week. I don't know after this week.
All right. We'll put the brakes on after next week. We'll take a break, Sasso.
And I'm your host, Alex Sears, and we're just going to get started straight away. First off, I just wanted to kind of start us off by saying there have been two major hurricanes. Hurricane Irma has not quite hit U.S. soil yet, but is still wreaking havoc in the Caribbean. If you are able to or have it in your heart to donate any kind of money or supplies or anything else, please, first of all, do so. But second, be smart with your donations. There's been a lot of kind of hubbub around the Red Cross recently, and just a reminder, they are government subsidized. So we all know how well the government will do with your donations. So please be smart with your charity. Research organizations, there are several websites dedicated to kind of guiding you to where the best place to donate is. Generally, local kind of sites and charities are the best. You can donate to local churches in Houston, local animal shelters, and I'm sure the same will be, the case will be the same in Florida. So our thoughts and prayers with the people in Houston who are still recovering and the people of Florida, Jamaica, and the Caribbean that will be very soon kind of in the nick of it. So kind of just to move on real quick from the very somberness of dealing with hurricanes and natural disasters, a government disaster that we can kind of talk about is DACA, D-A-C-A, the Obama-era executive order that went through or was voted on. There's a great SNL video that you can go watch, executive order kind of mocking up the I'm Just a Bill Schoolhouse Rock music video. So if you want to go check that out, I highly, highly recommend it. SNL has some good skits about that. But otherwise, Rob, why don't you start us off on DACA? How are you feeling?
DACA, I think Trump confused me going after it. I mean, obviously it came out of nowhere. I didn't see him making a move right now in his agenda. It kind of just came out with it with Jeff Sessions making the remarks. And I was confused because from day one, it seemed like it was going to be an agenda item that was going to get knocked out within that first weekend he was in office, and he really just ignored it up until now. And I think that having such a hard line on immigration in the campaign, something he hit Marco Rubio on, which basically cost him his presidential run, and something he hit Ted Cruz on, who is extremely strong on immigration for all the so-so establishment candidates, and he still lost because of that. And it's just really weird to see that a couple weeks before a couple of judicial rulings would come down at the federal level on this, he decided to act now and basically gave Congress this ultimatum. And I think that his softer amnesty-style approach on immigration right now is confusing to a lot of Republicans who are stuck between a rock and a hard place, either supporting Trump in this DACA rewrite through Congress, which would definitely alienate the base and get a primary for all the House people who vote for it. And then again, if they come out and support strong immigration, they're bucking Trump by going against his DACA rewrite for the Senate. And I think that going forward, he's really causing a lot of problems for House Republicans who are not polling well at the moment. And going forward, I really don't know what Trump plans on doing with this, because he says in 6 months he's going to revisit it. So I don't know what he plans on getting done in the next 6 months, especially the pace Congress has been working at right now.
I couldn't agree with you more, Rob. I think that this is a foolish political move on behalf of Donald Trump. I think that placing House Republicans and congressional Republicans who are actually holding less clout within government right now with Republican voters is actually quite foolish. What he could have done is he could have put the brakes on and let the court system actually work this issue out for him. It would have been eliminated due to Supreme Court and other federal rulings, because what Obama did in 2012 was he said, well, it's my prosecutorial discretion, and therefore I'm going to be able to give these illegal immigrants paperwork. John Kelly and a bunch of individuals came out at the time and said, the legality of this is very, very dubious, because there's a difference between not prosecuting and deporting illegal immigrants and actually giving them paper in order for them to work. And this paper actually makes them eligible for Social Security and a few other benefits in American society that were typically meant to reserve for American citizens. This issue could have been also resolved instead of giving it the 6-month deadline, which places Republicans in an unpopular position with the general public and an unpopular position with the base, with their own bases. He could have said, we're going to drop it now, and it's up to the Republican Party and the Democratic Party to create something that they want to rewrite. And Senator Tillis, I believe it's Senator Tillis of North Carolina, came out with a similar version of DACA, which states that it establishes more of a meritocracy. So it gives these individuals paperwork on the same, sort of the same age restrictions as it did, as did Obama, but it will be passed through the legislative process instead of being rammed through by the executive branch. And that'll actually enable individuals who better themselves by joining the military or by going and completing their high school degree or going and getting higher degrees, a route to actual citizenship and permanent residence in the United States. So what we see with Obama is these people are given paperwork, but they're not really given a way to find full citizenship and full assimilation and the full advantages of the United States federal government. And what we don't want to see is more immigrants on our welfare rules. So I think that could be a good option moving forward if we're stuck with choosing a DACA rewrite and getting funding for the border wall. However, that will alienate his base. That will malign individuals like Ann Coulter, who are very, very strong in immigration. She said he's not making one promise; he's making two promises. He said he's going to get rid of DACA and he's going to get this border wall, and sacrificing a large amnesty program for one-time appropriations for the wall is wildly irresponsible. He could use this political clout in a very, very effective way. He could get part of the RAISE Act through. He could get E-Verify through. He could get his wall funding through. But instead, he's focusing on the wall because the wall makes his base feel good. But at the same time, the policy he's pushing in order to get appropriations for the wall is something that alienates his base at the same time. So I feel like overall, it's a very, very poor political move, and it's of the same flavor as the Obamacare failure when he failed to use political clout in the proper way. And I think that this is a major problem in the Republican Party. They're not able to use their clout properly.
I think that's a great place to bounce off, because one thing that I would expect is for a party that has taken such a hard line on immigration over the past 8 years, for them to come out and say, Trump, what are you doing? This is not what you've campaigned on, and this is not how we voted in the past. In fact, in 2010, when the DREAM Act was voted on, these were some no votes. You'll hear some familiar names. Shelley Moore Capito, Senator from West Virginia. Bill Cassidy, Senator from Louisiana. Jeff Flake, Representative at the time. Well, all of them were representatives at the time. He's now the Senator from Arizona. We know his stances. Paul Ryan voted no. And in the Senate, John McCain voted no. Mitch McConnell voted no. Jeff Sessions voted no, even though he's been supporting this the whole time. And Susan Collins voted no. Those are some big names. And not to mention John Cornyn from Texas also voted no. All these names are big Republican names with a lot of party leadership who voted no, and now they're coming out with a wishy-washy stance. With people like Flake, who've come out and basically said, we need DACA, to these other moderate Republicans, these establishment folks who haven't really come out and said either or what they're going to do, and especially Paul Ryan, who says he's not going to ram through a bill unless Trump explicitly supports it. And I think that it's really hurting the Republicans that they're not coming out. They're trying to be lockstep with Trump here. I think that these people who voted no in 2010, this is documented 8 years ago at this point, almost 8 years ago, they need to come out again and say, we voted no on this once before. We're not going to vote yes on it this time around just because of the Republican president. They might have stood on their principles back then in 2010 because there was a Democrat president, but now when they have the power, they have to show why they voted no in 2010, and they have to reapply that same principle in 2017.
Expending political clout is a major problem in the Republican Party. I mean, if you look at Obamacare failure, if you look at tax reform failure, if you look at the failures we're about to face with DACA, it's incredibly concerning that Republicans sit on their heels and they wait for something miraculous to happen. They think that apparently there's some other person passing legislation because they sit on their heels and wait for it to happen. But when the Democrats receive power, what they do is they tilt the field against the Republicans. The Democrats had the power from 08 to 2010. They were able to pass Obamacare 4 years after its enactment. we were saying, oh my goodness, this is so impossible to get rid of, and you had Obamacare failure. And it's a major, major issue moving forward for the Republican Party. They're very, very hesitant to come out and make political statements that say, hey, Obama did this the incorrect way. I'm willing to come out and have a revised version of this, or I'm willing to come out and end the program completely. And they're massively unwilling to do that right now. And the Democrats aren't incentivized to help them. They love the position that Trump has just put Republicans in, because now the Republicans have to choose between angering their base and angering the general public. If they anger the general public, they push more individuals in the arms of the Democrats. If they anger their base, then they have less of a rallying point around the 2018 and 2020 election cycle. So the Democrats aren't incentivized to help. Democrats are perfectly willing to let Dreamers suffer in order to see headlines in 6 months that says Trump is deporting children, even though Trump is deporting on average around 17,000 individuals per month, and Obama was deporting around 20,000 individuals per month. In fact, Obama's peak deportation month was 35,000 individuals, or somewhere around there. So to pretend that Trump is the deporter in chief is being completely disgenuine, actually, because even in the Democratic primary debates, when they had the debate on the Spanish networks, they asked several questions to Bernie Sanders and to Hillary Clinton, asking them if they would deport a single Mexican or Latino immigrant, and Bernie Sanders immediately said no, and that forced Hillary Clinton in that moment to say no. And so you see the Democrats completely disincentivized to help the Republican Party in any way, shape, or form, and are happy to let Dreamers suffer in this scenario.
Well, I don't think this is a scenario where it starts letting the Dreamers suffer. I think it started back in June of 2012 when this executive order was written into law, quote unquote, because it's not really law, it's just an executive order, because even if Obama lost in 2012, he still would have had all these people on the books with their names, their addresses, their family, for Mitt Romney to take over and for him to decide whether he's going to deport them or not. And he knew full well 4.5 years later, a Republican could take over and do the same thing. And I think that he basically gave Trump this ticking time bomb, knowing that he would have to make a move that would be either politically unsavvy, like you said, for the base, or politically unsavvy for the general public. And I think that Republicans don't understand that if they knocked out all this easy stuff back in January, in that small window where Trump was president and just taken over, they could have got rid of all of this, because the Democrats and the media are wasting their political clout on every single thing Trump does, whether it be a tweet to Mika Brzezinski or whether it be the travel ban. And I think that Republicans don't understand that whether they change Obamacare to decrease the pool of people who can be in it by one, that, or just get rid of it in total, Democrats are still going to say the same thing, that they're killing people. So they don't understand that. They're going to say that regardless. Why not just do what you campaigned on? Because it's not like their reaction is going to change. It can't make it worse than you're saying you're going to kill people. And it can't make it worse than saying you're dragging people away, even if you're doing this lukewarm DACA repeal. I think that Republicans just need to act, because when Democrats are in power, they seem to get everything they want. And when Republicans are in power, it just seems that nothing happens for that time, and they get voted out of office with no accomplishments, because you really can't name a significant piece of legislation either down the pike or this year that Republicans have passed, even though they've come in with sweeping majorities.
Now, a couple of things I want to mention before we move on. I'm going to get kind of the last word on DACA here. Really kids anymore, the DACA recipients. I'm pretty sure the average age is like 26 or 27. And these are the majority of them, of the 800,000, are contributing to the workforce here in America. Whether or not you want to say that they're taking jobs away from America, that's a different story, jobs away from Americans. But it is important to just kind of remember and reflect that no major government program has ever been rolled back. You can see this with Social Security, with healthcare. It's almost impossible, it seems, to get these things rolled back. And honestly, at this point, I don't know if the Republicans trying to right a wrong is the right move, mostly because of the optics. If you, I mean, the Democrats can claim for days and days and days that Trump and the Republicans are just deporting kids left and right, and all of these people here that were legally allowed to work in the U.S. were thrown back to their home countries that they've never been to, that they never grew up in. That is a media and nightmare. It's an optical nightmare. No one wants to be in that position. So Trump's kind of pivoting here. He's trying to say, oh, we're going to end DACA, and now it's up to Congress to take care of this. He's trying to, if everything goes wrong, he's trying to throw the blame to Congress, to the House and the Senate, and see if they can just kind of take the brunt of it, because they've already, I mean, we can see in the approval polling, Congress is already taking the brunt of approval this year anyway.
I totally agree with that statement. Totally 100% agree.
All right. Well, I'm really glad about that. And we're going to go ahead and move on. And we're going to talk about Berkeley for a week, two or three in a row. Been talking about Berkeley all year. So quite a few major developments. We had actually an article on Lone Conservative yesterday from Eric Schaefer, and one today from our very own Rob Sasso. Actually getting the scoop, breaking the story on something that's going down in Berkeley. But Bradley, why don't you kind of bring us up to speed on what's going on in your crazy world?
Yeah, it was hilarious. We hung up last week and they decided that we were going to have three major developments in the next 3 days. So I'm glad to be back on and to talk about it, because these are really, really important issues. On Thursday, we had a representative from YAF come out. This was August 31st. We met with her to discuss ticketing information and logistics, just to make sure that we were on the right track with trying to get ticket sales up, because the university was stonewalling in every way, shape, and form. To prep for that meeting, I wanted to go back to the Cal Performances representatives and give them a chance to explain to me where they're at and when they will be ready, when they completed building this event, which that means building the ticketing, building the software within their box office, establishing the right AV and IT crew, and that we can move forward with ticket distribution. So I wanted to give them a chance to explain that to me, and I came by, left them voicemails in the morning and came by at around noon. They were both at lunch, the two representatives that I'm in contact with. And so I went to the lunch meeting with the representative from YAF named Amy Lutz. And we talked with her, the whole board of BCR, and established what we need to do and established some action items. And I kind of explained where we were with delayed communications with Cal Performances, how they were taking forever to get back to us on AV and IT inquiries, because Zellerbach Hall and Cal Performances is all unionized. So everyone needs to be consulted before they offer us a proper reply. Also, with the legal battle looming, every single email needs to be formulated like a press release. So I went from there, from that lunch meeting with Amy, back to the office, and we met there twice that day and were waiting for the representatives to get back. Once we came back the first time, they said that they were unavailable, and we came back a second time and they said that they had unexpectedly left for the day. So I had left Gina emails and phone calls knowing that she knew that we were coming, and all of a sudden by 2 p.m. she was gone. And so we decided to kind of pitch our tent right outside the office and see if anyone walked out that we would recognize and we were able to talk to, because she was hoping to get a tour of the facility in order to bring that information back to Patrick Coyle, Spencer Brown, and Chad Abbott. Chad Abbott's our AV guy, and Patrick and Spencer are two individuals who are consulting with us to make a successful event through YAF's organization. So there was no correspondence on that day, which concerned us. That was the same day where we decided to hang up flyers. In the meantime, while we were waiting for them to contact us or to reach out. And that was when a kid ate the flyer. That was an article on Lone Conservative. I was handing out flyers to every table. There was four or five different socialism clubs, the Cal Democrats, Antifa was on Sproul Hall saying that we're all political prisoners and you should join Antifa, which is frightening. We had individuals who were part of the BAM organization, By Any Means Necessary, on Sproul, and we handed them all Flyers, and we also had Bears for Israel and a bunch of other political organizations too that are much more moderate and liberal on campus. So we handed them flyers as well. But at one point, a small young man came up to me and ate the flyer, took it out of my hand, said he was interested, and shoved the whole thing in his mouth and chewed it up and walked away. I'm walking around with Amy at the time, and Amy, this was the first time she was really seeing Berkeley hysteria, Donald Trump insanity syndrome right in front of her. This kid ate the flyer and chewed it up, and she said, that is one of the most immature things I have ever seen. I should say, wait until they start spitting on us. Wait until they start flipping us off and they think they call us Nazis and pigs just by walking past our table. They're provoked in that manner. So she was just absolutely shocked, and it was amusing to see that article go up on Lone Conservative. I wish I had it on video. It just happened so fast. My hands were full, and the kid just started chewing the paper. And 20 seconds later, it was over. moving on to Friday, we finally got a meeting with the representatives from Cal Performances in the afternoon, around noon. And they told us that they performed a secondary security assessment, different from the ones that they had performed at the beginning, which stated the security fees, the insane security fees that were going to be imposed on the Berklee College Republicans in order to bring Ben Shapiro to campus. And so they said that they had had a secondary assessment and that we had to cut the attendance in half. So it went from 1,972 to 1,042 individuals who were allowed to come and attend Ben Shapiro's lecture. And that's because the other 900 some odd seats are seats on the orchestra and the upper two levels. And from that point on, we knew that the administration had gotten a lot more serious about their stonewalling tactics. We reached out to the UCPD immediately. I got out of that meeting. Gina said we had just come from the assessment. The university has made this decision. I called the police chief. I called the lieutenant that they claimed did the security assessment. And I also contacted this chief of police. The chief of police never replied back to me. And the individuals, Lieutenant Lee Harris and Captain Yao, both picked up their phones. Lieutenant Harris actually gave me a call back on Tuesday morning. Besides the point, Lieutenant Harris and Captain Yao were completely in the dark. They had not performed a security assessment. They have no documentation of performing a secondary assessment. They were completely in the dark about the issue. They had no idea that the university had cut our funding or cut our admittance. Yet they were claiming, the university allegedly says that their whole justification for cutting it was from a secondary assessment from the UCPD. So immediately your engine warning lights go off and you say, okay, this is something a little bit more pernicious going on, a little bit more malicious. And so we ended up visiting the office of the vice chancellor, who authored us, the dean of students, Joseph Greenwell. We had a meeting with him that same day because the university police department was unable to meet with us. And they said that they affirmed the fact that we would have our attendance cut, and the administration made the decision based off of advice from UCPD. We went on from there to, with no documentation, utterly confused about what was going on. Finally, the vice chancellor reached out and sent us an email, which finally gave some sort of hard evidence for this attendance cut and arbitrary restrictions that would be placed, unprecedented restrictions that would be placed on the event that we're holding, the Shapiro event. So basically they said that individuals won't be able to go to the top two levels because they're afraid of someone fighting and falling over the edge, and some people are going to start throwing projectiles from the top two levels. That they cited those concerns, and they cited Charlottesville and recent Berkeley riots as reasons to cut Shapiro's speech. They said that this was open for an appeal and that our security fee had been cut to the appropriate measure that they had previously quoted us for 1,000 attendees. But after you enter an agreement with YAF and Berkeley College Republicans, and YAF and Berkeley College Republicans have advertised the event as a 2,000 person event with full capacity and all the glitz and glamour that is supposed to be going with this, to tread back on your word is a massive problem. It's very typical with the Berkeley administration, though. They are very set on forwarding one agenda over any other. And that is incredibly frustrating to deal with on a daily basis. So I had to author an appeal last night, laying out our grievances, saying how it's insulting to cite Charlottesville as a reason to shut down our event, or to cut our attendance in half and to hamper our event, because Ben Shapiro is one of the largest targets of the alt-right on Twitter, receiving 40% of anti-Semitic tweets from the alt-right, according to the ADL. And so that's finally going through the approval process. We're having our event being built right now, and as soon as the administration lets us, we want to release tickets. We want to make this event as safe and as great as possible, but it's on the administration to empower the UCPD to tell everyone involved that violence will not be tolerated, that disruption will not be tolerated, that people are safe to attend this event, and they have a duty to make it the best event possible and to come through with the agreements that they have made with previously with Berkeley College Republicans.
Well, that was a lot right there. And I think one of the main problems is that it's really just someone to give a lecture at your school. And I think that's fairly ridiculous. You need to have an 8-minute explanation to explain why someone can't just enjoy a simple little speech at your school. And it has nothing to do with the protesters itself, really. It has to do with the school just not telling these guys that, you know, we're going to enforce the law like Ronald Reagan did back in the day. Because if you did, Antifa wouldn't be a problem because the law enforcement would take them out in 2 seconds. And with the trained police skill we have in our nation, I wouldn't see an issue. And with that kid that ate the flyer, I mean, part of me has to sympathize with him because being a sophomore and changing my meal plan, there are some scarce times when it comes to food. So you never know when you're getting an opportunity to eat something. So sometimes paper's on the plate. But unfortunately for him, he shouldn't be doing that in front of people. So going forward, I just hope you guys have the best of luck. I know I penned a little update today, piggybacking off yours, really. I'm seeing that they reduced the fee by over a third. I think that while that's good, I think that's $9,100 too much. I think that they shouldn't be forcing you guys to pay security fees because the job of the police is to protect and serve, and I think that that entails the job they have regardless of an extra fee. And I think that YAF is in the right if they're still continuing their lawsuit. I know they said they were going to sue at one point when they first levied that fee, but at the end of the day, I think that this is making a lot of hullabaloo out of nothing. I think the left is really just fighting a losing battle here because this would not have gotten much hype outside of maybe a lot of Shapiro fans and a lot of people in the Berkeley area from coming. And I don't think that them making this a nationwide thing is really helping their own cause. I think we discussed this a lot last week, and I think that their further actions, especially with the restrictions they put on the people coming in, I know there's four that I detailed about photo identification, no will call tickets, no mass buying of tickets, and like you said, Zellerbach Hall's upper mezzanines being closed down. I think this is just ridiculous. I think the left's just helping the right at this point.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a shame that I have to come on and filibuster or give super lengthy comments whenever I want to talk to media. It shouldn't be this complicated to exercise your First Amendment right, and they will feel the full force of that in court. This is unconstitutional what they're doing. It's an infringement of the student body's rights, and it's a shame to be put in this situation because in the Berkeley community is fatigued of this. If the UCPD and Berkeley administration and Berkeley municipality would actually enforce the law and encourage law enforcement, then we could return to civil political discourse in the land of the free speech movement, in the land where all good political movements go to die, as infamously quoted. So yes, it's full of updates and it's full days meeting with administrators, and the bureaucratic process is so frustrating to deal with on a day in and day out basis because no one wants to take responsibility. And you wonder why our generation has such a hard time taking responsibility. It's because the individuals teaching us and the individuals informing us of history and informing us of knowledge are completely devoid of that responsibility sometimes.
So you mentioned, I like the last point of how the administration's been devoid of responsibility because they tried to put all the blame of, you know, the security sweep to the police department when really they said that they had nothing to do with it. And I don't know why, but I kind of trust the police department's word a little bit more than the administration just because of how poorly they've treated you. Now, what is the date of Ben's speech is the 14th, correct?
Yes, the date is the 14th. They will not allow same-day ticketing, which is a major issue. So if you plan on coming, make sure you pick up your ticket at Zellerbach Hall's box office the day before close of business at 5:30. This is something we're fighting hard. All of these restrictions are unprecedented and drastically hampers our ability to put on a successful event.
Okay, so they are, you know, kind of instituting these security sweeps. They're instituting these extra fees a week, sometimes, you know, less than 2 weeks before the event is happening, trying to back you guys into a corner, trying to, you know, just make you throw your hands up in the air and give up at this point, and trying to raise, you know, the price of admission so you won't get enough students in there. This is completely dishonest. This is as dirty as I've ever seen politics played, and this is being played by a college administration. This is absolutely ridiculous, and I'm honestly just thrilled that you guys are still having a lawsuit prepared against the Berklee College. This is completely unheard of and uncalled for.
I mean, these are the adults in the room, right? These are academia. There are five Nobel laureates who work on this campus. It's astonishing to me when individuals refuse to protect our rights of free speech. And you finally see some of these individuals like Robert Reich, a pretty far left economist who works for the school, and some other professors come out and say, enough is enough. Just let the kids speak. If you want to combat the views, then combat the views. But this bureaucratic process when no one wants to take the blame is embarrassing us, especially when we're touting a free speech here all over the internet and all over the country.
I think that's right on the nose. I think it's, to this point, you have to understand it with the left. It's very hard to be a leftist because, I mean, the amount of anger you have to go with every day, the amount of effort they actually have to put in to make sure you guys can't exercise your rights, it's just ridiculous. I mean, there's no reason why people on the coast should be acting the way they are when it comes to politics. I mean, you could tell these people, their attacks are becoming worthless at this point because they just protest everything. It's always something in New York City. It's always something in Chicago. It's always something in L.A. You know, they have to be angry about something, and I think that at the end of the day, it's this critical theory nonsense that's just driving them nuts. They're just taking the meaning away from everything. It's just protest because there's someone with a red jersey on in the office. And I think that at the end of the day, they're not going to end up winning this battle because they're basically pitting people who are going to come masked with balaclavas and rocks and chains and all this stuff to beat up peaceful people who just want to engage in free speech. I think that the dichotomy of both sides, we talked about imaging and win-win situations when it comes to DACA, I think something that's the right's losing right now, but I think free speech is something the right's winning. We talked about this last week as well. I think that if the right just shows up and speaks like Ben Shapiro wants to, advocates no violence, advocates no aggression in return, a very pacifist message Ben has to make sure that his supporters don't get any of the blame for this. I think that if that's what we have to do right now as a movement to just make sure we win the free speech battle, I mean, we have to do it. I mean, kudos to you guys for putting up with this. I know with 8 days to go, I figure next week's show we're going to have some more stuff to cover, whether you're here or not, because I know you'll be really busy. But regardless, it's just going to be crazy because I don't think Berklee's going to let you off scot-free for the next 8 days.
I don't think so either. We're really trying to get tickets up. We're really trying to get the public involved in this event. There's a lot of excitement. YAF's interest list is, I think, over 2,500 people now. Our interest list has exceeded 600. People are excited for this event. Let the event happen at full capacity, please. The Berklee community wants this. The California community wants this. And when you disempower individuals who threaten our social contract, you're able to reestablish sane political discourse that doesn't push people towards more political violence. Let's move back to that. Let's start moving back to that, and let's be adults.
Oh, that's awesome. Love that last statement there. Yes, let's all be adults. Let's grow up a bit.
Easier said than done sometimes, Alec.
Unfortunately, yeah, so.
Says the three 19-year-olds with a podcast, right?
Well, I think that's going to do it for us tonight. It's been great spending this 35 minutes with all of you. Bradley, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Bradley Devlin on Twitter, BradleyDevlin. I'm a contributor on The Daily Wire. I am a contributor on Lone Conservative. I am a contributor on Red Alert Politics. And I'm going to be the conservative editor for a brand new media outlet, which is balanced but biased news, providing liberal and conservative viewpoints for every modern issue that a college student is facing with politics. So definitely keep an eye out for that. It's called University of Politics. It's going to be launching late September, and I'm glad you guys are able to hear its launch first.
Awesome. That sounds pretty great. Rob, where can we find you?
Well, unlike Bradley, not everywhere. You can find me at Lone Conservative. I just put out an article today about Berkeley, a nice little follow-up to what Bradley wrote the other day. On Twitter, at Real Robert Sasso. And, of course, I'm the host of Campus Conservative. Just had an interview with a fellow contributor the other night. Very good interview about Middle America, internships in D.C., and also college activism stuff. So check that out as well.
All right, and I'm Alex Sears. You can find me on Twitter at SearsAL and on LoneConservative.com. Make sure you follow our Twitter account as well at LOConservative. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next week.